Our analysis and program support division has been making technical improvements in how it identifies and sorts out landing information. And so this option duplicates the work that we now do. And so we think that it's not necessary, option A. And because it isn't necessary, because it duplicates what we're already doing, and it puts a burden and also an enforcement burden, we think it has approvability concerns. And so we just wanted to let you know that. And in a similar way, on dealer alternative 2, option B, that talks about reporting frequency where VTRs would be submitted within 24 hours of the end of the trip and dealer reports submitted within 24 hours of a purchase. That all sounds really good, except that we only sum them up every week. And so, again, it doesn't get to better information. It just makes people do more work. And if it doesn't get us higher quality information but just requires more work, that's a burden without a benefit. And so, again, we don't support that option, and we'd have a hard time approving it. And we just wanted to let you know that. And so it's more detailed in the letter, but we wanted to give you that information. And again, this is are things that we did approve before or did recommend before because we wanted to see advancements in this area. But our APSD division went and made improvements in how we do our record checks because we have the same goals that you do. And we're finding that's producing results, and we're happy with those results. Any questions? You can ask questions, and you know what I'm going to do. I'll bring Carrie here to answer them. I see David.
David. Thanks, John. What about your view as a services view on alternative 3? Since it's relative to the motion we're going to be looking at on behalf of the committee.
I want to turn probably to Dr. Karp on that one. Or what part of alternative 3 are you talking about?
Just the dealer alternative 3, the third-party catch verification, you know, the dipstick, et cetera.
Well, I think that's something that we don't have as strong a concern on approvability on that. But it is it's a burden. We want to know how the information can be used, how the observers can collect the information. I don't know whether you want to comment more on it, Bill.
Mr. Chairman, just to elaborate, Dr. Pierce, our concerns are, as Mr. Bullard says, we need to be satisfied that in collecting this data that there's a clear objective and a value to the data that's being collected. I don't want to be tasking observers to be collecting information for which we have no clear objective. And so that's a question that needs to be resolved. We also have some significant logistics and operational issues relative to tasking the observers to do this work. Those can be overcome, but they're going to take some time because they will involve training and also modification of the contracts which we hold with the observer providers to change their tasking and responsibilities. That could also result in some increased costs. That's impossible to tell at this point because, again, we have contracts with the providers, and if we change the tasking of the observers, then that will be a factor in determining what the cost is. Within a zero-sum game, it could constrain our overall ability to place observers, but that's I wouldn't call that a major consideration in this discussion. I don't know. Wendy Gabriel's in the audience. I don't know if she has anything else that she might add, since she oversees the program.
Yeah, Bill. Before we bring Wendy up, let's get some motions on the board, and we can see where they're going to go. So I want to, unless someone's got a burning question for John or Bill, I'm going to turn it over to Doug.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The hearing committee has a series of five motions they made and two consensus statements. The first motion I have is that the council adopt alternative 2.1.2. Alternative 2, options A, B, and C for the dealer weighing reporting requirements. And that passed the committee 4-2-4.
And it's a committee motion that does not need a second. I'm going to go out to the audience and go back and forth between those in favor and those who are not in favor. Those who are in favor of this motion, anyone want to speak in favor of the motion? Anyone want to speak in opposition to the motion? Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. I'm Jeff Kalin. I'm here representing Lund's Fisheries in Cape May, New Jersey, a vertically integrated fishing company, and also a member of the Herring Committee. You'll see my name on a lot of motions that failed at the last Herring meeting, but I'm here speaking for Lund's. And, you know, first of all, I wanted to say a couple of things. If you do the math on the slippage that's identified in the document after the industry's compliance with the use of the discard logs in recent years and so forth, it amounts to 0.02% of the TAL, I think. That's a pretty low number, and I doubt there's another fishery in the region that can match that kind of a number, frankly. We've just implemented Amendment 5, which prohibits slippage, the use of an affidavit, and we've learned that I think there's a need for education within the fleet about these requirements and some need to clarify what the standards and protocols are that are going to implement Amendment 5. So I think overall, we're not certain that this framework is going to accomplish much more than we already know, but we're certainly willing to participate in the process and support things that make some sense. John just spoke in opposition to alternatives, alternative 2 A and B, and I don't have to read their letter that talks about unnecessary duplication and so forth. And I think given all of that, you'd have to ask, you know, why would the council persist in requiring the fishermen to certify the dealer data? In our shop, we think that will slow down the process as dealers, frankly. I think you're going to get that worse information or information slower than otherwise. Historically, and I've been coming to Herring meetings since 1986, the dealer was the third party. And in fact, the dealer information is what is used to tune the landings in the fishery. So So we're opposed to 2.1.2 alternative options A and B, but option C, I believe, is the empty the fish hold option. We think that makes some sense, as long as we can bring water out with us, or as Ellen said, if you let us take water, we'll support that, I guess, but because we do need to take water out with us. And, you know, there may be a time when you have fish that's not marketable. Maybe it's you had a failure with your RSW system or something like that. I think Mary Beth mentioned waivers. That might make some sense because it's very difficult to landfill fish. So I think the concept behind C is something that we do support, but the other two, A and B, we can't support because I don't think it really gains us anything in terms of the information that we need to be able to manage this fishery successfully. Thank you.
Anybody else? Erica.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Erica Fuller from the Herring Alliance. I'd like to speak in favor of this motion, and first I'd like to thank the Herring Committee for all the hard work they did on all these motions. By itself, Alternative 2 might not be enough, but in combination with Alternative 3, we think that this would be a big effort to achieve one of the goals of Amendment 5, which was to decrease the reliance on self-reporting in this fishery. Perhaps in another fishery that was not vertically integrated to the extent that this fishery is, we would not need this third data stream. But in our opinion, this would do a lot towards identifying any large discrepancies if they exist or not exist. At the Herring Committee meeting, there was some discussion about utilizing a third data stream for a couple of years and then taking a look to see if there were any problems or not. And we would certainly be in support of that alternative. Thank you.
David.
David Gaethel, Ellen Diane. I'd like to ask a question, a clarification. Who does it apply to?
Laura.
Actually, thank you for that clarification. The measures are intended to apply to limited access herring vessels consistent with Amendment 5 catch monitoring. So it would be A, B, and C vessels.
Okay, in that case, I have to oppose it. I'm a day boat. I fish for whiting. I have to register for herring. You know, as I keep saying, I don't even know why I'm here, but I am. And I'm a day boat. I go 7 days a week. That means that when I get in every night now, I'm going to go 7 days to the post office to mail this thing. I got to get online 7 days a week when I get home. This is unduly burdensome. There is absolutely no reason for it. As you say, you only sum them up once a week. What difference does it make? So I hope somebody makes a motion to amend to at least get rid of A and B. As far as C goes, it doesn't matter to me. I don't keep anything in the fish hold. It's not big enough.
Further comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Terry.
Yeah. Just wondered if the chamber would offer a motion to amend that a little bit.
So you're going to make a motion to amend?
I am.
Okay.
That a waiver would be issued only after law. I think Karen has it. Put it up, would you, Karen? So I can remember what I wrote. And this pertains to the C option. A waiver would be issued after an inspection by an appropriate law enforcement officer of the fish hole to make sure it's empty. And that would only apply to A and B permit vessels.
A and B for all three components? Or
yes,
just
all three components.
Okay, let's help Karen get the language cleaned up. And
well, I don't. If you guys want to get rid of it, you want to do it. I'm open door friendly.
So, Terry, is your motion to amend, including deleting C from the upper part of the underlying motion?
It is.
I'm confused now. I don't have
to do that. Tom.
Lori, can you explain what this does?
I think so. I think maybe the motion needs a little more language, but my understanding is that under option C, the motion would suggest that for option C, a waiver will be issued. I mean, I guess it would be for instances when there are fish in the hold.
Yes.
After inspection by an appropriate law enforcement officer. I think there's still, I'm not really, I think we, it needs to be a little more clear on what grounds there would be waivers. Because the way the motion reads right now is that at any time a vessel wanted a waiver, it could get a waiver.
Terry?
So I've had some discussions with people in the herring industry, and it's been communicated to me that sometimes they have RSW failure, the fish rot in the hole, so they're basically non-marketable. And I was trying to get away that we can actually, you know, they're not getting a waiver. They're getting, somebody's going to come down and look at that hole and say whether or not their RSW system and they're non-marketable. And then they can take them out and dump them if they have to. But there is going to be you can't just call NIMS up and say my RSW system broke down. You're going to actually have to be inspected by a law enforcement officer. So that's my take.
Okay. Before we have any more discussion, is there a second on the motion? Second by Vincent. Doug.
Just a question. It's my interpretation that option C would only apply to that the fish holds would have to be empty before heading out on a declared herring trip. Could the vessel with an RSW failure, could they go out on a non-declared herring trip and release those fish? I mean, the fish have already been accounted for in the landing stream. But what you're asking is for a waiver from when you're about ready to go out on a herring trip, declared herring trip, that you'd still have fish in the hold. What if you just went out and released those fish before you went out on your herring trip, then came back in? And I know that's a waste of fuel, but that might be a way of not having to have this exemption or this waiver. Because it clearly says in the document, correct me if I'm wrong, Laurie, that the fish holds need to be empty before going out on a declared herring trip.
Mary Beth.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one comment before I make a comment on this issue, and that is that this is final action on this framework for herring, and so I will be recusing myself from voting on this action and from making motions, but I will participate in the discussion. And I do that because I work with vessels that harvest greater than 10% of the herring quota. But relative to this discussion, I think it would not be preferable to allow a vessel to go out and pump off fish on a non-herring trip to come, then come back to the dock and leave again for a herring trip. That seems outside of the intent, I think, of the original motion. And also I would note that it's really to pump off fish inside like that, I mean, is not necessarily allowed under other regulations that don't pertain to fishing. So there's that. And I think that the intent of the motion here to amend that Terry has made is to allow for a rare occurrence in which, for example, if somebody's RSW were to fail, which can happen, it's a mechanical issue, and you come in with fish, you're still going to take fish off. But when you come to the dock and you're pumping in, you know, water from the harbor that could be as much as 70 degrees in August, by the time you get to the, you know, near the bottom of that fish hole, I mean, those fish could be gurry. I mean, they're just not a value of any kind. Perhaps the motion needs a little bit more clarification on it, that is what the waiver is intended for, is for, you know, if a vessel can show good cause of why they cannot offload those fish, that they're not marketable or they're spoiled or rotten fish, that the waiver would be acceptable. So I appreciate the thought from Doug, but I think that scenario could actually allow people to dump fish in a way that we're trying to discourage.
PK.
Yeah, I don't think I can support this motion for a few reasons. One, I mean, at the committee meeting, I was wondering what the agency would say about this. So, I mean, I would like to have seen A and B, although I agree with them. But if the agency says they don't do much, then I'm at this point willing to strike them out. That's one part. The other part is I don't like the idea of a waiver. I could go along with C by itself, but a waiver to me is too arbitrary. I mean, it'd have to be well defined. And then for the third reason, I'd like to see C boats stricken out of it as well. So I won't be supporting it. Thank you.
Tom Dempsey?
Yeah, I'd just like to echo almost everything PK just said. I think I was convinced and still have strong feelings that A and B would be a significant improvement. And, you know, I hear what the agency is saying, and I guess we'll have to consider that when a subsequent motion is brought. But I don't think we should create a waiver on the fly to this. I think at a very minimum we should support option C as is. I mean, if these are truly very rare events and nobody's trying to do it, I just don't think we need to create a waiver on the fly. And I do agree with him as well that, you know, we should address who this applies to. And, you know, if it doesn't make sense for the sea boats to be included, then we should say that right up front.
Vincent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As far as the motion to amend and creating a waiver, We adopt option C, and we don't allow for a waiver. It is a legitimate issue that boats holding fish in 70, 80-degree weather are not going to be able to sell them all. So what are we going to do with them?
Terry.
Yeah, I mean, the discussions I've had with people in the audience today where, you know, it's rare that it happens, but it does happen. We need some sort of a mechanism to let them do something with that fish. You know, these waivers aren't going to be something that you can just call NIMS and get. You're going to have a law enforcement officer come down and look in your hole and say, okay, seems to be appropriate, you're issued a waiver. I think it's a reasonable compromise on that, because I wasn't at the committee, I'm not on the hearing committee, and I don't really want to I don't really want to amend their motions. I just thought it would be helpful for that. So I will be supporting the motion. So.
Okay. Other comments on the motion to amend from the council? Mary Beth?
Yeah, just one thing to add. I mean, if this were the case, you have no home for these fish. I mean, you can't take them to the dump. They don't want them. So if we don't have this type of thing available for rare occurrences, which clearly needs to be the intent here, then somebody has to say what we're going to do with the fish.
Mike?
Yeah, I did want to reiterate that we need to be clear again as to what class of boats, category of boats this apply to. I mean, at one time somebody said in discussion of it that it was only A and B, but that's not what it's written up there. So I do think before this is perfected, unless I'm reading it incorrectly, have I missed something? Anyway, so that's one point, is to make sure we know what it applies to. My general question is, if it's clear that the fish in the hole are being accounted for, then I'm not quite sure what is the purpose of saying you can't leave with them and dump them at sea. And that's an honest, naive question. It's just unclear to me what problem we're trying to fix it, if they are fully accounted for already.
Tom?
Well, I guess that's a question I have for Lori. If fish are left in a hole and a vessel leaves, and it's not an observed trip on either end, or maybe even if it is an observed trip, how are those fish counted? Doug mentioned in his discussion that they were landings, but I don't think they really are landings. So that's a question.
Right. Well, the fish, in an instance like this, the fish would be landed, not sold, and then taken out to sea to be discarded. So they should appear as discards from the previous trip. I can't tell you from looking through the data whether or not this is occurring a lot. We're not seeing at this point, with the improvements that NIMS has made to quota monitoring and data quality checks, we're not seeing discrepancies between, you know, we're not seeing significant discrepancies between the catch reports from the vessels and the dealer reports. So there aren't, you know, large amounts of fish that aren't being sold by the dealers that would indicate that this is happening a lot. But technically, and from the talks I've had with folks in the industry, these fish would be reported as discards from the previous trip.
Mike?
But there's no mechanism to assure that happens at this stage. I mean, if the trip isn't observed, the dealer doesn't ever, I mean, this, as I understand it, there isn't a mechanism to assure that either the dealer accounts for them or they're reported by as discards unless this somebody sees something at this point in time.
Right. I mean, these fish wouldn't be accounted for by the dealer in any case, but in just like with any other fisheries, it would be reported discards, vessel reported discards.
Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've been talking about the improved data reporting between the VTRs and the dealer reports, and since 2003, the service has made significant improvements on that. However, I think it's important to put this into context. Based upon the Herring PDT report from March 6, 2014, on page 3, the range of difference between VTR reports and dealer reports ranges from negative 16% to positive 11%. On a 100,000 metric ton ACL, a 5% margin of error represents 11 million pounds of fish. I think we just need to put this into context. It's important for us to say they're better. Yes, absolutely, because before 2003, we had discrepancies in, you know, 20s and 30%. So absolutely kudos to the service for moving that direction. But given the volume of this fishery, a small margin of error represents a large amount of biomass, and I think we need to get that clear on the table. having a provision that requires at least an empty hole that allows us to know what's happening to the fish, gives us a good baseline before a voyage, I think is a good foundational step for us to go forward and have better data reporting.
PK, Terry, then Doug.
I just had a question. I don't know if it would be to you, Dr. Pierce, or Doug, about how the Atlantic States Marine was thinking of monitoring this.
You know, the commission or the herring section meets at the third week of May, and it's going to be approving a draft for public comment. And those details will be outlined in that draft and taken up for public hearing. Final actions anticipated at the summer meeting in August. No? Yes, it is, Tony.
This is a PID, so it's an amendment, so it actually takes a little bit longer than normal. So this first document will just be general concepts. It won't have specific options outlined in the PID. So I'm not sure we'll actually specifically address how it would be monitored in this first round. It would be in the second round over the late summer, fall, that we would have specific options. And then if there is sufficient time, I need to go back and double check because we have to have a certain number of days in between when the document is out and we have hearings, we would consider the document for final action at the annual meeting in October.
Okay, thanks for clarification. Terry.
Yeah, I mean, the accountability part of it is part of this motion. We'll actually be able to document when a guy has fish in the hole that it's brought into the mix. It's not just taken out and dumped without being accounted for. So, I want to reiterate that we need a vehicle for them to get rid of these fish somehow, some way, whether it's they're going to get dumped in the back in the ocean somehow, so we might as well make it so that they have to get away, but to do it somehow, some way. So.
Doug.
This, obviously, as we just mentioned, is a measure that was asked to be developed in amendment for ASMSC, and Laurie and the PDT decided to add this in. It might help. I know this came from the commissioners of Maine at ASMFC as a concern, and it might help getting some kind of an explanation of why the commissioners from the state of Maine felt this was something that we needed to have and at least take out for public hearing and considered in here. And the other thing that is just as a comment that I'd like to provide to the maker of the motion is this is a very broad waiver. It says a waiver will be issued for instances when there are fish in the holds after inspection by an appropriate law enforcement officer. So anytime there's fish in the hole, regardless of whatever the reason is, there will be a waiver that's going to be provided and under this motion, and can they leave the dock without that waiver is the other question I have. Just so that if we do approve this, that it's clear as to how this will be put into the document and implemented in regulations.
Terry.
My intent, and I don't know if that needs to be in the motion, is to give them a waiver for refrigeration failure, non-marketable fish, not for just because they can't sell them. So that my intent was that, and if you'd like me to add it into there, Doug, I would be. Could you add refrigeration failure in there?
Can you add non-marketable?
Make it non-marketable fish. So,
Ellen.
Terry, was your intent to take the sea boats out of this?
It was.
Are you going to?
We're getting close to the Pierce rule. So my intent is for that
all three of those options only to be put towards the AV boats.
So, I mean, that's what you said at the very beginning. I just didn't make it.
So, Terry, what we probably need is some specific language that's saying all the measures in 2.1.2 would apply to A and B boats only. Right? Karen? Okay, thanks. George?
I don't know if this is practicable or not, but I was wondering if it would be helpful to have, as part of issuance of a potential waiver, if the criteria are met, some kind of verification that the fish in the hole has actually been reported.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that would be.
Terry,
I mean, my intent is to make it so it's not easy to get, and the fisher reported, it gives them an out when they have a refrigeration problem. It's for AB boats. I mean, if you'd like to give me a minute, I'll rewrite it. And, I on the fly, that's my intention, hopefully. The fish counted, AB boats are only, and it's for refrigeration failure. So.
Okay, Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate where Terry's going with this. I don't think this is ready for prime time. I think in principle, I like the direction of where this is going. I'm concerned that, you know, what's the difference between non-marketable and unsellable? I mean, the more we complicate this, the more problems of definitions we get into. And I think we need to set this aside. I'm not quite sure what the appropriate procedure would be, but I'm very nervous about creating a waiver on the fly like this. And for that reason alone, I'm probably not going to support it unless we craft it more and bring it up later.
We've gone so far on it right now, we're either going to vote it up or down. PK, then I'm going to go out to the audience. Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Patrick Paquette, recreational fishing advocate from Massachusetts. I support the original motion that the committee passed, and I hope that that's what you get back to. But I really had a question, and I think this goes to General Counsel. Once those fish are at the dock, and especially under the scenario that you have gone above 40 degrees in that hold, I have to question whether this council actually has the authority, or even NIMS has the authority, without an EPA consultation to allow dumping of X amount of fish that are above safety regulations in water. And I know you don't have the authority to dump them in Massachusetts state water, but the question is, once you cross 3 miles, at what there is an amount where at a certain point in time, then that's considered hazardous, and you're not just allowed to go dump them. This isn't like dumping of fresh fish in a fishing operation. This is, you're talking about something that's come to shore, and then now you're talking about, in the scenario that's being discussed around the table, going above in 70-degree water at 20 minutes, those fish are going to be at that. Just be careful, because I think you're getting into stuff that's going to bring in other agencies and other kinds of marine safety. Thank you.
Brian.
Ryan Raber, Fishing Vessel, Providian. If there's a question about whether it's refrigeration, whether it's marketable, whether it's non-marketable, what about limiting the number of waivers that we're allowed to have per year? Say we can only have 2 or 3 waivers a year. If our refrigeration breaks 16 times a year, probably we're doing something we shouldn't be doing. Thank you.
Jenny?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jenny B. Crestwood, Purslane. I guess speaking to all of the portions of this, I'm not extremely in favor of the first two, but on the section B, I just want to say it really does seem very redundant. You know, I don't think it's going to offer a whole lot of new information to you, but one thing I would like to ask is if someone might make a motion to change that up a little bit to make sure that the definition of sale of that fish would be when it reaches its destination. We have said numerous times that this, it's really not, we can't do it in 24 hours unless you clearly define when the point of sale is, and I would suggest that when it reaches the plant that it's being sold to, like in the instance of Canada, that when it reaches, you know, Bumblebee Seafood, that that is when it's sold, and then they have 24 hours to report it, if you're going to pass this. My main question or comment here is, I guess, maybe some language for Terry's whole thing is, let me read you the language that I kind of crafted up here and see if you might accept it or someone can change it. That perhaps the language, in the instance of refrigeration failure, proof will be shown that the system is in fact not working and all sales for the fish have been exhausted. And again, clarifying, like he suggested, that these are coming off the quota and being counted. And then you could even add what Ryan said. I think that's a really good idea to say, pick a number, you know, three or... Personally, I think three exemptions is more than enough for one vessel. That, yeah, obviously, if your refrigeration keeps breaking down, you need to fix it and quit selling your fish so cheap or something. I don't know. So that maybe is some language to help out. But I know that the industry, a lot of us had really been in support of this C option or portion of that to help Albert about. So, thank you.
I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Owen Rochford. Make a note of it, please. I manage a fish plant in New Bedford called Norpal. We process herring and mackerel. And what amazes me is the number of organizations that we have to adhere to. We have FDA, USDC, DEM, Coast Guard, no enforcement, NIMS, just to name a few of the agencies we have to adhere to. One of the things we have is a thing called a HACCP plan, right? And basically we inspect the fish at point of entry. Now, for us to process a food quality fish, and what we do is we try to process a food quality fish. If the fish are above 40 degrees, we reject the fish. Now, you know, if you kind of railroad ahead here as to what you can't do with the fish, well, you come to a deadlock. I mean, are we supposed to take substandard fish because the law dictates that we take it, which is in violation of our HACCP law, right? I mean, if the fish isn't up to our standard due to the fact that it was towed too long, the refrigeration broke down, the inspection won't pass what we consider a food quality fish, the alternative the boat has, you know, is limited. It might be able to sell some for bait, but there has to be a provision brought in. We don't want to waste any of the quota. We want to process as much fish as possible. But you have to have some way of getting rid of fish that won't pass the standard. Thank you.
Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to speak twice on this. I just wanted to come to the microphone and say that after looking at the data over the last several months, I think it does make sense to take the sea boats out of this mix. You know, whether or not you go ahead with A and B of the Section 2.1.2. I've already spoken on that, but I did want to come up to the microphone and say I think the sea boat should not be involved in this. They're just not catching enough fish. Thank you.
Does anybody else want to speak on the motion to amend? Seeing none, well, we're back to the council. Mike?
Yes, thank you. I was going to suggest as a friendly amendment to Terry that where it says a waiver will be issued, that might be changed to may be issued. And with that, I would, in essence, be expecting that the agency, in terms of its guidance to its enforcement people, would take account of this discussion and the intent of the council in developing some basis under which they could or they would or would not issue those waivers. And with that, I would hope we could move on and make a decision on this. Thank you.
Thank you for that bailout. Are you feeling friendly, Terry and Vincent? Gene?
Yeah, I'm just concerned, and maybe by the absence of enforcement weighing in on this, that we're putting this really a non-enforcement function on enforcement to be ready at any time of the day or night to come and do this. And I don't know if they're willing to do that. I just think there's some real operational problems here that the agency hasn't had a time to look at to see if they could actually support this, have the manpower and the resources to do this, and whether it has to be a law enforcement agent.
All right. I'd like to, Logan, could you comment on this, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to keep this brief. So my understanding of this motion is to, just for the case of refrigeration failure, allow for fish to stay in the hold and for them to go out and dump the fish. Non-marketable fish, fish that they can't sell. Right. So as far as us being able to respond to every one of these, it's hard for me to say because I don't know when it would occur. Two, I don't know how often it would occur. And there's been some comments about, you know, only allowing a certain number. I have no means or way of keeping track of how many times a boat has asked for an exemption for a refrigeration failure. So it is going to be difficult for enforcement. I think if the issue here is that they're concerned that they're going to get a violation for having unmarketable fish on their boat due to a refrigeration failure, I don't think that would be a case that would be interested in pursuing anyway. So if that's the concern,
onward into the fog. Okay, I'd like to wrap this up. So Terry and Ellen, and then thank you, Logan. And Mary Beth, and then we're gonna move the question.
I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood that my intention was for this to only be on A and B vessels, and C's are exempt, and it's not up there. So
it's in there, third line up from the bottom.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Okay, Ellen.
But that only applies to alternative, okay, thank you. I'm sorry. Only, thank you.
Okay, Mary Beth, you get last word.
Just wanted to add just
George gets last word.
A little justification because it came up, the why, and as Lori indicated, these fish are classified as discards, and National Standard 9 bycatch includes economic and regulatory discards, so I think, you know, based on National Standard 9, this is minimizing discards in the fishery.
George.
Well, I'm going to raise the issue I did a few minutes ago. I think this could have value if you made it a contingency of the possible issuance of the waiver, that there's some verification that the fish on board that are going to be presumably dumped were actually reported. then it has some potential value because we're trying to get a better idea of the total mortality of the fish. Without that, I'm not sure what this really does. So I would recommend that be added in there.
Terry, I think that was your intent, wasn't it?
It was my intent, George. If you'd like to add some specific language, hey, everybody else has.
Rather than beat this up anymore, if you could just put the intent is that the fish has to be reported.
Just put reported fish.
And if this motion to amend passes, we've still got a lot more work to do this afternoon. So I'm going to call a question here. Those who support the motion on the board as amended, please indicate so. No, this is the motion to amend. And those opposed? Okay, the motion carries 8-7. Mary Beth. And one recusal by Mary Beth. Thank you. All right, we're back to the main motion. Is there, as amended, is there any further? John.
In my earlier remarks, I said that there were approvability concerns on A and B. Just wanted to emphasize that. Approvability concerns means we're probably not going to approve A and B, just in case my English isn't good enough. And it's not because A and B is not an improvement over the situation that existed when we partially approved or partially disapproved this amendment. A and B is an improvement over the status quo. It's just that the improvements we've instituted are also an improvement, and we think render this redundant. And so we think because it's redundant, it's a burden without a benefit. And that's why we think, because of that, we're going to have a hard time approving A and B. Just want to let you know that.
Thank you, John. With that, counsel, is there any further counsel debate? Doug.
I'll bite. I'd like to make a motion to amend this option to remove options A and B.
Is there a second to Doug's motion to delete options A and B?
Second.
Seconded by John Bullard. Okay, let's go around the table. Starting with you, Tom Dempsey. No? Does anybody want to comment? Anybody from the audience want to comment? Jinxing myself. All right. On the motion to amend, those who support the motion to amend, please indicate so. The numbers are going all over the place. Same sign. Those is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 12.
Okay.
And those opposed? And one recusal. So the motion carries 12-3-1. We're back to the main motion as amended. And is everyone clear about what we're voting on? Lori, are you clear?
Yes, I just wanted to make one clarification that we discussed under option C, and that would be that the requirement would be empty of fish. So as long as that's clear, I can clarify that if this moves forward in the final document.
And that would be consistent with the ASMSC intent as well. Okay. Those support the motion on the board as amended, please indicate so. Those opposed? And those recusing? The motion carries 13-2-1. All right, we're moving right along. Doug, you're up.
Thank you. The second motion is that the council adopt alternative 2.1.3, alternative 3 for dealer weighting reporting requirements to apply to limited access vessels that store herring in the fish holds. And that passed the committee 7-1-2.
Committee motion that doesn't need a second. I'm going to go out to the audience for comments. Jeff.
Quickly, because I know there's a hockey game on later on. We want to get out of here. We're going to support this. I think, you know, we're already measured the mackerel holds. Most of these boats have been measured, and sticking the tank is something that we don't think is very onerous. And frankly, I don't see why the observers couldn't do it, whether it's under existing contracts or contracts we may negotiate as we buy observer days in the future. So I'm speaking in support of this. Thank you.
Anybody else in the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Mary Beth?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the committee, I did not support the motion. However, I do support the general concept, and the reason I didn't support it was because of the advice we got from the agency, particularly the Observer Program, relative to contracts and increased costs. And I think that if, and there's no real data specific to what those costs would be, and I think, you know, Dr. Karp did mention that some of that was could be overcome, that it would take some time. And perhaps, you know, it'll be a while before a final rule is out and this is implemented, and perhaps the agency could just give us more information on what that really means at a future meeting. And then the, you know, proposed rule comes out, and we could always provide comments if there's something significant there that we think needs to be changed.
Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can certainly follow up at a later meeting with respect to those costs, but I would like to speak to the rationale for collecting the data, because I've seen nothing that convinces me that there's anything that is planned for using this data or what the benefits would be relative to the cost. So it's not just the dollar cost that we would incur, but there's a significant amount of commitment that we have to make to following through with this, to collect a data stream for which there's no clarity whatsoever that it is going to be used or how it's going to be used. And I personally have some significant reservations about that, which I feel it's important to share with you.
Tom.
Just to that point, I'm heartened to hear that there seems to be a lot more support, broad support of this alternative. I think is essential to this framework and where we're moving with this action in general. And you know, I think it's great that that sounds like the center's open to working out the logistics of how we get this done. In terms of why we're getting this done, I mean, we have to keep in mind this is a very unique fishery. I think something like 2/3 of the vessels operating in this fishery are selling effectively to themselves. I mean, that's different. So having a verification of the landed weight with a third party, or having a verification of the catch using a third party, that sounds like a significant improvement. And that's really, I think, what this is about. While I understand that, you know, you're not going to use this data stream in the way that you do dealer reports, I think verifying the accuracy of those dealer reports and improving our confidence in that information is a significant step forward and one worth making.
Mr. Chairman, could I respond? I'd like to pursue this a little bit further because I think this is implying that in some way we are picking up the responsibility for this verification. And if that's the case, then we need to be able to understand that that's also something that we're being asked to do. More importantly, I'm not aware of any work that's been done, and we have certainly done no work to evaluate what the accuracy and uncertainty is associated with these kinds of measurements. And so if we are asked to verify or compare these measurements with any other data stream, this is going to require some work, some significant amount of work to be done to collect some data and to evaluate the quality of that data relative to the other data streams. And again, that hasn't been done. I just want to be clear that we're not creating expectations that we are unable to realize.
David.
Well, pass.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To that point, I think it's really important for us to understand what the data we're generating is going to be used for and what component of this ecosystem it's being derived from. And we're talking about the basic food structure, major forage inputs for the rest of this marine ecosystem, and we've got a range of difference between VTRs and DO reports that's anywhere from, as I mentioned earlier, -16% to +11%, and that's the improved. And again, given the high volume of this fishery, that's a lot of biomass that we just don't know we've landed. As we move forward with EBFM, as we move forward with more and better understandings of mortality, natural mortality, and fishing mortalities, understanding what we're taking out of the ecosystem at this level is fundamental. And I agree with Tom that I think this is not only useful foundational data collection for the rest of the research projects and management agendas that we have in play right now, but it also addresses an issue laid out in Amendment 5 that we are supposed to be moving away from self-reporting. And so I'll be I'm going to be supporting this, and I think the need is quite clear.
Terry.
I don't think it's unusual. I am going to support this motion, but I don't think it's unusual for a variance in VTR data and dealer reports. If you look at just my historical VTR data, I'll guarantee you we're 10, 12, 14% below what the dealer actually reports. So, I mean, we're going through, we're estimating, and it's a hail. And I can see how a higher volume fishery could be an easy 20%. So I don't think it's unusual, but I will be supporting the motion. So,
any final comments?
Yeah.
John.
So I think we'll probably abstain on this, and we'll get a more complete briefing on the Economics 101 of observer funding tomorrow, and the constraints that Bill has, physical, human, financial, on this. But I think if this passes, I think the challenge for the council and council staff is really to make a robust argument about what the benefits are here, because the costs on observers of training, on work, you know, the costs are clear. And so what you have to do is make the case that we're going to get some information that we're not getting already from dealer reports, because it's easy to ask for more information. So, but there's a cost to it, and that's what Bill said two or three times in this discussion. And that's what we're going to explore a little bit more tomorrow. And so... In the submission, there needs to be some clear argument that this work, this cost, is going to deliver information that is different than we're already getting. And that's important. So that's the case that has to be made.
Mike?
Yeah, as a follow-up on the comments that Dr. Karp made, this, aside from the workload or cost issue, it does strike me as a potential confusion as to what happens to this data and what its significance is. I mean, I can see it being used by the vessel operator for their vessel trip report. And so they put in a number that hopefully is more accurate than what they estimated just by looking in the hole. That's fine, but that actually doesn't enter into the management decision-making process or the scientific process, because those are basically based on the dealer reports. So you may get a more accurate vessel trip report, but what influence that's going to have on future science and future decisions is unclear to me. The alternative might be somebody would say this is what has to be used in the dealer report. And then if that's how it's going to be used, then it will have a great deal of influence on management and on science. But that's a very conscious decision that one would have to make to say this information is better and more reliable than what's there right now. It's not just a comparison that it's different. It's that it's better. And obviously that decision has some influence on how people are paid for fish and all of that sort of thing, since I presume that's by volume or weight. So I'm not against this motion per se, but I do think that it does open some doors to some confusion as to what happens to the data and whether it, in fact, changes anything or not in both the science and the management side.
All right, Lori?
Yeah, just to follow up on that point, one of the problems with this, the data that will result from this in terms of really being able to utilize it for either trip reports or dealer reports, it's not going to be possible to do that because this is going to be an estimate of total catch on board. It really isn't going to be an estimate of how much herring was landed. And so for mixed trips, it's going to confuse things, certainly, because you're going to now end up with a new data set that's going to have a different number from the VTR and the dealer. And I'll just point out, in Area 2, 30% of the trips are mixed, herring and mackerel. So what you're going to get from this is an estimate of volumetric conversion of estimate of total catch on board, but it's not going to relate to the vessel trip report or the dealer report for herring if there were both herring and mackerel on the trip or herring and other species.
David.
Yeah, at the beginning of our discussion, especially when Laura gave her presentation, she made it very clear that we need to pay close attention to our framework for goals and objectives, and I've been trying to do that. I'm going to support the motion because I believe it's consistent with objective number 2, which is to develop a program providing catch-by-catch information that will foster support by the industry and others. That is a well-designed, credible program. How many times have we heard complaints, written and oral, concerns about the accuracy of landings, about the amount of herring that has been landed? This has gone on for 4 or 5 years. Great criticism by the others, not the industry itself, but the others. Environmental organizations, for example, the NGOs, have expressed great concern about the accuracy of the information. So we've moved this forward. We've moved the ball forward with the idea to foster, me anyways, to foster support by that element, by the others, in this particular case, NGOs and others concerned about this, about the accuracy of information, foster their support. And I don't believe that they're going to they want third-party catch verification, vessel-based, as I do. Therefore, I think if we do not adopt this motion, we are not going to foster their support. They will continue to be adamantly opposed to this framework, and they will say that we have failed to address the very specific concerns they have stated many times over at committee meetings and before this full council. So for that reason, I have other reasons, but for that reason, I'll be supporting the motion.
Matt. Okay, Jim.
Thank you. I'd just like to add a little bit to what Dr. Karp and Lori were, the points they were making. From the Science Center's perspective, they're, of course, focused on how the data will be used in an assessment. And from the comments that I've heard from talking to staff are that this method of looking at the volume is going to yield very imprecise estimates, and it relies a lot on the water content in the tank, the composition of species in the tank, and the sizes of the fish that are there. So I think some of the reservations that you're hearing from the science perspective are in relation to those factors.
Tom.
Yeah, just following up on that, I think we've heard a lot of great conversations, and this measure isn't going to solve all our problems. I think I said at the committee meeting it's not going to toast bread, but it's a. I think a lot of us believe that it's a significant step forward in providing additional verification, and think that it's something that we should adopt. And with that, I'd ask that we move the question and move on.
Yeah, thank you for that, Tom. And we're spending a significant amount of time on each of these motions. We've got a fair amount of work to do to complete this framework. We're not going to stay here all night. We don't do our best work late at night. So it's sort of my intent to motor on to about 6:30 and call it quits for the day. So let's see if we can move this along, and we're going to start with moving this question. So those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those abstaining? And those recusing? The motion carries 14-1-1, or 14-0-1-1. Okay, Doug.
Next motion is that the council support operational discard option B, operational discards prohibited on midwater trawl vessels in all areas on trips with an observer on board. That passed the committee 6-2-2.
Committee motion that does not need a second, so I'm going to go out to the audience. Sean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the council, my name is Sean Guillen. I'm here representing the Ad Hoc Pelagics Coalition, representing Cape Seafoods, Western Sea Fishing Company, and Irish Venture. I do apologize. We had a letter. We spent a lot of time this morning talking with others in the industry to try and get on a similar page. But I think most of what's in here will be conveyed now and perhaps when we get to the next issue. First of all, I would obviously support the goal of improved reporting and accuracy in terms of both direct catch and bycatch in the fishery. We'd love to get to a place where everybody accepts and is happy with the data. And I think that the motions that have passed already, the industry supporting the leaving as a general matter, making sure the vessels are holds are empty before they leave, promotes a more responsible fishing practice, not overfishing for markets you don't have, and we recognize the costs that are involved in the motion you just passed, but think that that will provide additional information that's important. But there really is no issue more critical to the effects of Framework 4 on the industry generally than the question of operational discards. And I just want to be clear. We're simply talking about fish that cannot be pumped out of the net during normal operations. Fish that fall out of the net, float out of the net, or frankly even released because the net tears cannot be considered discards, or fish that is released because there's no intention to do that. But this is a different situation. Operational discards are going to occur in purse-seine vessels, in the midwater trawl vessels, simply because it's not possible to pump all the fish out of the net. You've heard a lot. I think if we sort of draw together all the threads we've heard from the Herring PDT, from NIMS and NIMS, NOAA General Counsel, and look at the evidence. The strong theme here is that we need to make sure that the benefits of what we're doing outweigh the costs. Now, this proposal says no operational discards. In conjunction with other options that are out there, including the industry-supported Alternative 5, which would require a return to port for an unauthorized slippage event, there are any number of vessels in the fleet that cannot pull the net up onto the deck and make the fish, which what the regulations call for now, bring the fish on board and make available for sampling and observation. And there's vessels that physically can't do that. So essentially, if you adopt that in any of the trip terminations for unauthorized slippage, you'll be telling a certain number of vessels in the fishery that they can make one trip and have to return to port. Otherwise, having the three exemptions, which are critical, I think safety is absolutely required by National Standard 10. The clogging by dogfish, I think we all recognize how prevalent they are. And the mechanical failure issues are essential to the operation of this fishery and achieving optimum yield. But this issue of the operational discards is one where you really have to take account. We understand the conservation concerns, but National Standard 2 requires you consider the best available scientific information. According to that, the amount we're talking about on average is 200 pounds. You have to take into account the variations and contingencies, and those include the fact that these are not a uniform set of vessels with similar capacities. Some have triplexes, some have deck ramps of different sizes, but even leaving the fish, as was suggested, in the end of the net, when you move to another area, when you finish fishing and begin the search again, that net has to be drawn up on the reel. If there's fish in the caught end, some vessels could bring that up, some couldn't. But it's a matter of safety, trying to bring a net over the side in lurching seas, to count and measure 200 pounds of fish that the observer can otherwise see. I think it's not efficient, it's not practical, it doesn't consider a lot of the other things. Now, I understand the conservation requirements are there, but even the PDT and NIMS are struggling to find a conservation justification. So I can't more strongly urge that the council reject this motion, and would offer, it's in the letter, a revision to the current regulations, which would simply require for the fishery as a whole, outside of the ground fish closed areas, that no vessel issued a limited access herring, Atlantic herring permit, and carrying a NIMS approved observer may release fish from the net, transfer to another vessel that is not carrying a NIMS approved observer, or otherwise discard fish at sea unless the fish has first been made available for inspection by the observer to the maximum extent practicable. That removes is simply bring the fish on board and made available for sampling. Now, we can argue about maximum extent available or maximum extent feasible, but the idea is, and right now on those vessels, the bag can be made available to inspection. Generally, they can identify the species and make a good estimate of the amount of catch. If you can bring that aboard in a reasonable manner, you can do that. But where it can't be done, you simply can't tell these vessels that they can't make more than one trip, more than one tow per trip. I think that's critical. And the other point that I think this whole issue raises is that because we're relying so much on observer reports for enforcement of these measures, there really need to be clear objective standards that they adhere to, and you know, that we can all agree, I did this, the report says it this, it's a violation or not.
So, Sean, could you?
Yeah. And just to summarize, I mean, the final point is that this wouldn't affect the closed Area 1 regulations. And there is a big difference between the two. Because if you have an unauthorized slippage event or any slippage event in the closed area, you can go out to the fishery. But once you're in the fishery, you're in one of the, you know, you can't leave it but to go back home. So this gets information in a practicable way. Thanks.
Steve.
Steve Wiener, Choir and American Bluefin Tuna Association. We support this motion as written. It seems reasonable to me if operational discards are really in the 200 pound per tow range, it seems very reasonable that you ought to be able to bring that aboard. It's 200 pounds. I think sometimes we don't focus on what we're saying. It's 200 pounds of fish. And from what I've heard and what I've seen, that net has to come back aboard anyways to be tied back up, as I understand it, from what I've heard at the committee meeting. So the net's coming aboard anyways. Bring it aboard with a fish. It's only 200 pounds. And just for some of those who are not at the committee meeting, what we believe is you've got to close all the potential loopholes. You can't have any, whether it's mechanical failures, safety, operational discards, or dogfish. What we support is closing all the potential loopholes. And I wish the industry would support this. It doesn't seem unreasonable that they ought to be able to find a way to get a couple hundred pounds of fish on the boat. Thank you.
Okay, I see a hand in the back, but not a face.
J.P. Bellotto, Providian. I just wanted to point out that these fish are getting observed with the operational discards. I think in the comment book, I don't know what page it's on, there are some comments directly from the observers about operational discards from the Providian, about what view they had of the god end. And the first one is, I had a clear view of the god end. After it was disconnected from the pump, I saw only a few scattered fish left in the bag, no more than 10 pounds of all Atlantic herring. So they're observing the species and how much. So, like adding, bringing them back on board, they aren't going to gain any more about species composition and amounts because all of those are pretty much estimates anyway.
You have a question for him, Terry?
Let me ask you a question. So, I mean, I run a stern trawler, and that's hard for me to wrap my head around that it's a pain for you guys to do that because, I know your boat in town, and I can see you disconnecting the pump, and you must have to clip that up at some point to get it back out, or do you clip it up before you throw it over the side, then make a turn and go off and set? Is that your function normally?
Well, if there's fish still in the system's not designed to pull the net on board with anything in the bag. It's just designed to go on the rail. It doesn't have enough power to do anything else.
10 pounds.
Well, 10 pounds. But you're observing that anyway in the net.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can I just confirm that it would only be considered under this motion, if this motion passed, it would only be considered a slippage if the observer does not see it, correct? In other words, if the observer sees it, then they can do whatever. If they need to release it, they need to release it because it can't be pumped, correct?
No, I mean, the fish has to come on board the vessel.
All right. So So the reason that we keep pushing and pushing and pushing on this, it's not about 10 pounds, it's not about 15 pounds. It's about that at the end of the year, every year, a report comes out about this fishery, and it's about a page to a page and a half long, and it's got about 30 other species besides the ones that we're not concerned with. And sometimes there's species that are of concerning to another fleet, like the bluefin tuna fleet or the striped bass fleet or the groundfish fleet. And on page 3 of your appendix 2, part of this document, I'm sorry, appendix 1 on page 3 is the picture, what I keep talking about. It's called the bell. And you'll see a big set of bars across the top of it that years ago I was informed was called the seal guard. And there are things that prevents getting into the hose and going up through. And it's those things that are on the rest of that big long list at the end of the year that the observer must see. And if the observer can't see, is not being allowed to see it, there's a reason. So it should be considered a slippage event, and it should be prohibited to hide something from the observer. If not, every bycatch ratio that you see is bad science. If not, all of this data and the whole point of the observer being on the vessel is a little bit wasted money and wasted resources if we're going to allow an amount of something in the bag. And I'm going to agree, most of the time, it's probably very few fish. But every once in a while, the fact that this fishery, we can't put a net in the water without avoiding a seal or a sturgeon in the same water that these guys fish off of Cape Cod. What's going through the bottom of these bags? I don't know, but that's the observer's job, is to observe the discards and what's in the bag. And that's why this needs to pass. It's very simple. You see the piece of equipment that prevents that stuff from getting up onto that vessel. So it's the observer's got to be able to do their job. Thank you.
Brian.
Ryan Raber, Fishing Vessel Providian, speaking against this. What we're talking about here is taking a bag of potato chips, eating the entire bag of potato chips. Then we take it and we shake it out and get every single crumb out of it. And there's the dust left inside the bag. That's the amount of fish we're talking about here, 200 pounds. Before we disconnect the pump, the observers has to come alongside the rail. Look in our bag. We just moved all the fish down to the pump, to the seal guard, if that's what you'd like to call it. And he can see this in here, what is in the bag, clearly. So now we have to disconnect this pump, and we have to get it back aboard safely. So when that happens, there's a certain amount of fish left in this bag, around 200 pounds, 10 pounds, not very much fish at all, that is released from the bag in this operational discard. That's why it's called an operational discard. In the process of operating, fish are discarded. It's a very small amount. Sorry. So in effect, what you're doing with this is making it impossible to pump fish, making it so we can't operate legally with this prohibition on having operational discards. And it isn't right. The observer is seeing what's in the bag. I don't know how I'm supposed to pull my bag aboard alongside so that they can see any more. They've already observed it. This doesn't make any sense. I cannot support this. Thank you.
Erica.
Thank you. Eric Fuller from the Herring Alliance. I'd like to speak in favor of this motion. This motion would keep the entire fishery consistent with the rules that are already in place in the groundfish closed areas. In addition, NMFS has already determined in a final rule that operational discards can't be effectively observed unless they're brought on board. It would, you know, this is the only way that we'll ensure that these fish are brought on board. It's critical to getting a full and accurate picture of the catch because of the stratified nature of the catch that's in the caught end of the net. And it's already been determined that these vessels are entirely capable of getting them back on board. The council should clarify that any vessel discarding fish at the conclusion of pumping without bringing it on board is essentially exercising one of the exemptions and should be forced to either move or leave the area. Thank you.
Ian.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Owen Rochford, Norpal. What you're asking here is to basically ban midwater fishing, because that's in effect what you're going to do. You see, once you're finished pumping the fish, there's certain fish and they're floating and they will not go to the pump. No matter how much you rattle and shake, they are not. It's not going to happen. So, say, for example, you try tying up the cod end and bringing the net back aboard. You're not going to be able to tie it tight enough to save every last one of these fish. So the next thing, a fish falls out of the bag. So you have to terminate your trip. I mean, that's basically, in effect, what you're talking about. We're talking about, like, you know, pittance. You see, the way the quota is established, right, there's safety measures upon safety measures and upon safety measures. So this 15% plus or minus is insignificant to the greater scheme of things. I mean, whether you count, like, whether it's 10 pounds or 200 pounds of fish and you're terminating a trip, you might as well just ban the fishery. Like, let's get down to the chase here. The Herring Alliance has nothing to do with they can't stand midwater boats. Their sole purpose is to burden the industry with as much cost as possible. Everything that the PDT came up with was burdensome as regards cost. What it's going to achieve as regards stick in the tanks, that's a joke, like, because about 10 to 15% of your fish will float in the tanks. So you're driving your stick down through this floaty fish to get to the main body of fish. You'll come up with less bloody weight in the boat than what we're actually monitoring at the moment. So what you said, everything we've done to date is incorrect. I mean, at what stage can you verify the accuracy of what you're doing? I mean, Mr. Bullard, like, pointed out that they already have a system of checks and balances in place. And now you're being more than burdensome to the industry. Okay, so you passed the motion. Now you're going to have a set of data that's totally inconclusive because it's going to come up with less actual fish than is in the boat. This thing, again, is burdensome on industry, and it serves no purpose. It's not going to help the fishery be more accurate. All it's going to do is be cost prohibitive to the industry, so you're going to bankrupt them? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm opposed to the motion because it's ludicrous.
Chris.
Hi, Chris Wiener, tuna fisherman from Portland, Maine. I'm with ABTA Inquire. There's a lot of things I'd like to say right now, but we're, 6 o'clock in year 7 here, and we're talking about 15 to 200 pounds. I'm not the strongest person in the room, and I can lift 200 pounds over the rail. If it's really 200 pounds, I mean, I can't believe we're sitting here arguing over this right now. It just seems to me either there's one of two things happening is industry just doesn't want to change, or they're hiding something. And I'm saying that to imply that it's one or the other, but does a groundfish dragger have the option of leaving their net in the water and then maybe having the observer see it? I've been on boats my whole life, and I wouldn't put myself in a position where I would say, yeah, I can confidently guess what they're dumping. And so I think we need to simplify everything. I don't know how we're still debating, going around and around on little details here. Again, this is year, 7? And everyone at the table knows the issues, and I think that we need to simplify. This is about closing loopholes. And in our opinion, we support this and we support the other committee motions. Do all or nothing. But if you're going to give loopholes, it isn't we're sitting here worrying, thinking that these guys in the industry are cheating all the time or breaking all the rules. But the bottom line is you close the loopholes, simplify it. And so, again, we support this. And again, I'm having a hard time believing how this many years into it we're debating this issue still. It's hard. Thank you.
Peter. All right. Lori.
Just a couple of clarifications as we move forward. If this motion does pass, I will assume that the intent would be, as indicated in the document, which would be to develop some regulatory language similar to the test hose. And I do think that an important clarification relates to whether or not this would be a straight prohibition or whether the measures to address slippage would apply. In the groundfish closed areas right now, operational discards are treated like slippage events. based on the discussion earlier, this could be a straight prohibition or it could be treated like that. I'm not sure. I haven't had time to really think through the differences, but conceptually I can see a difference. So I think we need to have that clarified. And then the one thing I also want to say is this was not discussed in Amendment 5. We didn't contemplate prohibitions on operational discards in Amendment 5. This came through rulemaking on the closed area 1 provisions. So this is really the first time that the committee and the council have engaged in this debate about this issue.
Okay. We've heard significant public comment. Council members are only going to have two bites at the apple. So Tom's hand was up first. We're going to go around the table.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. In terms of what I think we get to with this motion is we eliminate operational discards from being a term or a class of event. You know, if we prohibited operational discards, then yes, unless the slippage falls under one of these three categories, then the other consequence kicks in. If you're not bringing aboard catch and actually slipping that, then yeah, it becomes a slippage event. Operational discard just ceased to exist as a separate category of event. And I think that's consistent with the discussion at the committee, and I think it's the clearest path forward, and certainly my intent in bringing this motion at the committee. I think overall what we should be aiming for with this is consistency. We do have these rules in place in the groundfish closed area. The reason they're in place is to maximize the amount of catch that we're actually sampling, that we're making available to our observers. That's an important goal. It was a goal of Amendment 5. It's a goal of this action. Right? We've seen that it can work. And we've heard a number of people say, we absolutely can't possibly do this. This will ban midwater trawling. And yet we've had this rule in place in closed area 1 since 2010. And midwater trawl trips have occurred in that area, right? So I don't understand. It's possible. It maximizes the amount of catch that's available to the observer, which is of critical importance to our management goals. And it's consistent. We've talked with a lot of people about confusion about the rules. Let's have one rule. It's important. It's feasible. It's doable. In fact, we already have it on the water. So I support this motion, and I think we should vote it up and move on to the next component of it.
Dave, do you want to comment? Doug?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had originally had some concern with this motion because it was applying throughout the fishery as opposed to closed area 1, where if you had operational discards, you could just move out of the area and you could continue fishing. But there was a clarification made at the committee that Laurie mentioned that we could treat this as a test tow so that these operational discards, as long as they remained in the net, the net could be reset with those things in. And what that made me think is that this is going to be something where you'll have with each tow, you might, during the first however many sets, you could just leave those small amounts of operational discards in the net until, of course, the final tow when you'd have to bring it on board. At that point, you're going home anyways because it's the final tow. The other thing that was brought up was there may be some fish because you can't make the cod in tight enough where there wouldn't be some fish slipping out of the net. And at least the committee has a consensus recommendation that I hope the full council will approve, that catch not brought on board due to falling out of the gear would not be subject to slippage measures. So I think there's that concern is addressed right there. So with that kind of caveats with this that were clearly brought forward at the committee level, I at this point I can support this this option.
Mary Beth.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not really sure where to start. You said just two times you could speak? All right. I guess the first thing that we did hear was that one of the rationales for needing to do this is species composition. And the species composition on the vessel, when you've pumped 200,000 pounds of herring on board and you have a small amount of fish left in the net, that is observable by the, the visual sight of the observer, really doesn't add much to any bycatch ratios or composition of the catch. And national standard, too, I go back to this presentation prepared by NOAA General Counsel, and on National Standard 2, they say decisions based on politics instead of science are not okay. And from my perspective, that is what this is based on. We're not going to gain any improvement in the science collection data, but it is definitely based on politics. There's a lot of misunderstanding of how the fishery operates, and I appreciate Doug's comments about the test tows. The difference here is that for a test tow, you don't hook up the pump. It's when you reset that net out, and that is what that means. I mean, once you've hooked up that pump, the only way that net is going back out is it has to fully come aboard and be reclipped. And so the test tow reference is not exactly accurate. I also think Lori's brought up, several important issues that need to be clarified. And if these operational discards, which are not equal to slippage in any way, in that slippage release is an active step taken by the vessel versus fish left that the vessel cannot do anything about. We always know that there's going to be some fish that can't be pumped. They are different. They're not the same. But we do need to know how these are going to be treated. If we treat operational discards as slippage, and we continue with the motions recommended by the committee, that means these vessels can go out, make one tow, and then they're going to have to move 15 miles. They're going to have a closed area that's 30-mile radius, and or might have to terminate that trip. This is just, and on top of that, we have data in front of us, is that 2/3 of all tows have operational discards. So you add all these things up, and you wonder why people are disturbed by this for very, very small amounts of fish that are not going to add to any significant scientific data that is useful to the assessment or any kind of bycatch ratio. Why are we doing it? Because we don't believe the observers, which is really rather frustrating because the observers believe themselves. They've talked to the PDT. The PDT asked that question, can you observe these fish and make estimates that you have confidence in? And their answer is yes. Yes, we can. So there's a whole bunch of people that want to put 100% observer coverage on our vessels. We support that because we have people making all kinds of allegations about things that we feel are just crazy. But at the same time, let's put them on and not believe them. I mean, we've got to make up our mind. Either we have an observer program who say they can estimate these fish, or we don't. Perhaps I'll listen to some other comments, and then you said I'll get a second bite at it. I would like to explain at some point exactly for our vessels what it means to try to do this. But I don't want to go too long, too much further. You can come back to me.
Terry. Sure.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the same point that Tom Dempsey did, that, we've had this in place for 3 years, but I have another question. Maybe Lori could help me with that. So does this pertain to purseine vessels, and were purseine vessels ever exempted from operational discards? I mean, because it's totally impossible to get every fish out of a purseine net. There's no way you can do it. If something's going to roll over the corks. Are they exempt from that, or how's that work?
The measure that was proposed for Framework 4 applies to midwater trawl vessels only. There are operational discards on purseine vessels, and they're documented in the observer data as well.
Ellen. PK.
Yes. So let me get this straight, though, because from what Mary Beth was saying and from what the gentleman from the audience was saying, if they bring the net on board, and if it's 250 pounds, that is considered a operational discard. And then I'll take it a step further and say that operational discard does not make for a slippage event, correct? And the fish that fall out of the net coming over the side of the rail, because we made a motion on that too, also does not count as a slippage event, correct? So I don't see the problem. I really don't. I don't see why they can't bring it on board. So that was my clarification I needed. Thank you.
David.
This is whether it's, if operational discards are going to be considered a type of slippage, then I agree with Mary Beth that pretty much puts the midwater trawl fishery out of business, creates all sorts of impossible situations for them. I don't think the motion implies that or says that specifically, that it's going to be a slippage event. It can't be, because that would be totally unfair to the industry, and it would be completely inconsistent with the objective that I cited a little while ago. So I'm going to assume that this motion is not going to result in operational discards being considered as a slippage event. However, I do find attractive the point that was made by Laurie a little while ago, and we discussed it at the Herring Committee meeting. We didn't pursue it very well, but she's highlighted it again. And I think it makes sense, and that's the language that's on page 15 of our draft framework regarding the test tows. And I must admit, I'm a little bit confused now because of what Mary Beth said about test tows, but setting that aside for a moment, it seems that the language in italicized text at the top of page 15 makes a great deal of sense and would benefit the midwater trawlers and would deal with the issue of others wanting to know exactly what is in that net. The language is, small amounts of fish may remain in the net at the end of the pumping operations if the net is reset without releasing its contents, provided that all catch from the net is available to the observer to sample when the next tow is brought on board for sampling. I might revise the latter language by saying when the last tow of the trip is completed. In other words, you'll know at the end of the trip what was caught. In other words, you're not going to have cumulative amounts of operational discards that are released. They'll still be in the net. Some of it will be repumped back up into the boat. Some will go back down into the net, as was indicated before, as to how this operation works. So I think that I can adopt this motion, support this motion, if it doesn't pertain to slippage, and that if there's an understanding that we would adopt that regulatory language that applies to operational discards as test tows. And I would make a motion to amend if it's necessary to include that specific language. I'll turn to the chair for guidance on this. If it's our intent to include that regulatory language, then maybe I should make a motion. I see some confused faces between...
Tom, go ahead first, and I had another thought too, but go ahead.
Well, I think Laurie raised the issue here a couple minutes ago when we started that it's a little uncertain as to what this means, and Tom Dempsey said what he thought it meant, but that language is not actually in this motion, I don't think. Is it, Laurie?
No, and I mean, I think...
And it sounds to me like David is suggesting a different version than what Tom Dempsey said, so I think... We need to, one way or another, get it clear in the motion as to what it is the council's voting on.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I think that the point relative to the regulatory text and the intent to develop regulatory text similar to test tows, I think that's in there. I mean, I think everybody's agreeable on that. But I definitely think we need some clarification in the motion whether this would be a straight prohibition or whether the slippage measures would apply.
David.
It would have to be a straight prohibition and slippage measures do not apply. Otherwise, we have doomed the Midwater Trough Lake, since they will always be having some operational discards in every tow. And if it's treated as a slippage event, then that would mean that if we go forward and we don't approve any exemptions, then they'll have to move a quarter mile or whatever it is with every tow. And that makes no sense, and that is patently unfair to the fleet with, let's say, 200 pounds in the net, then they have to move far afield in order to make another tow. So that's my... if you need a motion, Mr. Chairman...
My suggestion would be if this motion passes, then your motion to... Then we could take a second motion to clarify this. Before you get a second bite there, John?
Yeah, I've just got a question. Maybe Laurie can answer it. That, correct me if I'm wrong, currently there's a prohibition on operational discards in the closed areas. I think what happens now when there are, if it's impossible to get the few fish out of the net, what happens now, and how has the experience been since 2010 with that?
Well, as I mentioned, the prohibition on operational discards in closed area one was implemented through rulemaking in response to a lawsuit, and was it was changed and implemented by NIMS in response to a lawsuit. And what it essentially does in closed area one, which we then extended to the other groundfish closed areas, is it treats an operational discard event like a slippage event. So vessels are required to bring all fish on board and made available for sampling by the observer unless it is not brought on board because of safety, mechanical failure, or dogfish. So right now, if an operational discard event occurs in the groundfish closed areas, the vessel is required... It would have to be for either safety, mechanical failure, or dogfish, and the vessel would have to fill out a release catch affidavit and exit the closed area. So it treats an operational discard event like a slippage event.
So follow-up question, what are the statistics on that? Have there been slippage events reported? Have there been exceptions? If there's some data on that, I'd be interested.
Yeah, there's information in Appendix 2 regarding closed area 1, and there have been a lot of operational discard events in closed area 1. In 2012 and 13, there were 94 events observed, and I think a lot of that relates to confusion about how these regulations were implemented. And I think a lot of it, I don't think anybody really fully understood at the time what the regulations were. I know that has since changed. And with the implementation of Amendment 5, there's been some outreach done by NIMS to try to clarify what the rules are inside and outside of the closed areas. But just in the trips that occurred in closed area 1 in 2012 and 13, there were 94 operational discard events. So technically, under these rules, those events would be considered slippage, or treated like slippage.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else who hasn't spoken? Ellen.
Sorry, Terry. I'm trying to clarify in my mind something that Doug just said, and how the herring fishery is takes place. He said that if the fish were left in the net, the operational discards were left in the net and not brought on board, they would stay in the net until the vessel was ready to come home. I'm trying to get this straight. And at that point, if those fish were not brought on board, they would be operational discards and treated as slippage, but the vessel was coming home anyway. So I guess my question is the net emptied and brought on board in between tows, usually?
Mary Beth, can you answer that one?
I can. Yes. So, again, there just seems to be a lot of confusion about how this all works. And, you know, if you're going to bring a net alongside and you're going to pump fish out of that net and you're not going to bring the net aboard, that means you have to reclip the bag at the rail. If you're going to, some vessels, including ours, do not have the capacity with a stern ramp to pull a net with fish aboard unless it's an extremely small amount of fish. And to bring those fish aboard, you have to bring them over the rail. In that instance, you would be cinching the bag to unhook the pump, put the pump on deck, having the, you know, rehooking up to that net, which when you cinch it and unhook it from the pump, you're going to lose fish, which are operational discards, but that's going to happen. And then you're going to bring that bag aboard with fish on. Now, normally, what you would do under normal fishing conditions is that when you finish pumping, your pump is at the stern of the boat. There's very little net left in the water, 5 feet, 6 feet of net. You've dried the net. Most of the net is on the reel. And the observer looks at what's there, very small piece of the net, takes a picture, estimates it. And you'd bring the pump back alongside. And it's a quick release. You quick release that pump, and the net with the caught end open falls into the water. Those small amount of fish are discarded. And then you bring the net aboard and into a safer environment, you reclip the bag, and you reset the net. So if we're going to make people cinch off the net and try and either bring fish over the side or extremely small up the ramp or whatever, you are going to need to have exemptions because that's not a safe thing to do in all environments. When it's rough, the pump weighs 1,500 pounds. It's not safe to ask the crew to do that. Some days it is, a lot of days it is, and some days it's not. So if you apply the exemptions and they have to fill out an affidavit, I suppose that could be a possibility. Do it when you can. When you can't do it, you don't do it. But if you count it as slippage, then again, and you apply the exemptions and they have to move 15 miles and create a 30-mile radius closure, then it's a one-tow fishery. And let me tell you, the price of fuel to go to Georges Bank, that does not add up. That is not practical, and that is not an economic situation that many vessels can deal with. You can't go to Georges Bank, make one tow, and go home. That is just the craziest thing. I appreciate, you know, some of the thoughts that people have expressed trying to make this work, but there are a lot of issues. And I also appreciate the concept of, well, let's vote this up or down and then clarify it. Well, how can you do that when you don't know what the motion means? I mean, it either means that we're moving towards a one-tow fishery here or we're not. Are we going to have exemptions for safety? Because you can't do it unless you have those. There's just a whole bunch of issues that are not clear by this motion at all.
PK.
I'm still trying to grasp the process, though. When the net comes up and you're done pumping, you're going to unhook the pump anyways and slide it over, and a boom is going to probably take care of the pump, or at least bring it on board or hold it in place. Then the rest of the net, if it only has 250 pounds, to me, I mean, we do this on trawlers all the time. It's you know, it's like a splitting strap. You just cinch it off, and you lift it up with another boom and bring it on board. If there's only 250 pounds in, and you're saying they're going to pop the clip anyways, then they're not going to be discharged. You're going to retain those fish anyways. And then you're going to set the clip back up, and then you're going to throw the caught end back over. So I don't understand why you can't bring that net on board and then can't keep those fish for just, they won't be discarded. They're just going to be a regular catch, counted as catch.
So I guess that was a question, so I'll answer the question. Well, I mean, in some ways I think you're correct, and then other ways not totally correct. In that, yes, it is possible at times. I mean, 200 pounds in a net that weighs 20,000 pounds, it's not the net is quite large. You know, so there's weight there. So the boom on our vessel is not going to pick up the pump with the net, and that quick release when you automatically opens that caught end. So they're at the rail, you know, cinching it off, doing a bunch of different things, and then, I mean, there's a whole process to it. And I think it'd be quite a pain. I think it might work in some circumstances. There are a lot of concerns. But again, it's not an activity that you want people at the rail when the deck is awash. It's one thing to ask crewmen to go do a quick release and another to go through this whole process. So, again, that's why I feel that the motion is not clear. You know, there needs to be safety exemptions. What does that mean to a vessel? All of those things. So I agree with you, PK, that this can work. It can be quite cumbersome and difficult, and there are safety concerns. It's not doable every time. And two-thirds of the tows, this is an issue. So I think we need to address that.
Tom, you had your hand up. Then Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think this is a pretty simple issue. It's a prohibition on operational discards. The only thing that's making it more difficult is we're just confusing ourselves. I mean, PK is right. If it's a small amount of fish and that's what everybody's agreed it must be, right, just bring it on board. This couldn't be simpler. And I think we're making it more complicated and we have more to do before we break. So I know you have David lined up, but I'd like to move towards the question if we could.
David.
Yeah, I had a motion to amend, but I'm not going to make that motion because if I do, we'll definitely go well beyond 6:30. This is truly much more complicated than I thought it was going to be and made more complicated primarily because of additional information that has been provided that I hadn't accounted for during committee deliberations. So I would say, because we're going to discuss herring tomorrow, there's a lot more to do, I would move to table this motion.
Until tomorrow morning.
Until tomorrow morning.
Is there a second? Okay. Motion fails for lack of a second. Are you seconding it, Terry? No? Okay. David?
Then I would make a motion to amend, and it would be, what would this option be? Operational, to add to the end of the motion that's up there. Well, actually, I would move to this could be substitute. Move to substitute. Operational discards would be prohibited on midwater trawl vessels in all areas when carrying an observer. Period. Operational discards occurring outside year-round groundfish closed areas will not be considered slippage. As it stands right now, it is considered slippage inside the groundfish closed areas. So that's my motion to substitute, which basically is the Herring Committee recommendation, the language that's on in slide 18 with that additional sentence regarding our not calling operational discard slippage.
Is there a second? Second by Doug. You provided your rationale, Doug. You wish to comment?
I'm making this, seconding the motion.
Yep, but as seconder of the motion, do you wish to comment on?
No.
Okay. Mary Beth.
So I have a question on the motion. If the operational discards outside of the groundfish closed areas are not to be considered slippage, it doesn't address the concern about whether they'd be eligible to use the exemptions. Because I think that it's not safe to be at the rail in all conditions and to do this.
David.
Well, I'm assuming that tomorrow we'll be acting on the committee motion that there would be no exemptions. So with that understanding, I would not want to see operational discards considered as slippage outside the groundfish closed areas, because then what would happen with no exemptions that would outside the groundfish closed areas, that would mean that, as you said before, with one toe, they're going to have to move great distances, because they will have some operational discards, 20 pounds, 50 pounds, whatever. So this would prevent that from happening. In addition, because it's in the document already, and we've already discussed it, I'm assuming we'll also have this provision regarding the test tows. In other words, not every tow is going to have to be brought on board the boat and sampled. It would be at the end of the trip.
Okay, I want to go out to the audience on the motion to amend. A couple for and a couple against. Who wants to speak in favor of it? Sean? Anyone want to speak? Do you want to speak? You raise your hand. Are you speaking in favor or against?
Okay. I'm against the substitute in the main. Again, Mary Beth has explained, and the analysis in the framework document showed that not all vessels can comply. There's been a sense around this table by some people in the audience that it's actually feasible to treat every tow prior to the last tow as if it were a test tow, even though the council's been told that it's a completely different situation. You're not hooking up the pump. The regulations now allow operational discards for purse seine vessels based on the understanding it's just not possible to get all this fish on board. I guess I would ask the council to explain, probably to Lori and the agency, what information you're hoping to garner by this, and is it worth the cost in terms of safety and so forth. I am not sure a prohibition is better than a slippage, because as Mary Beth pointed out, for one, you haven't voted on a move-along option, but two, no exemptions apply. A prohibition means if you do it, and you do it as of necessity, you've just violated the law. So you're gaining no information beyond what the observer can see over the side of the vessel, putting people's lives at risk and gaining no information. What is this council doing?
Does anyone want to speak in favor? You're speaking in favor of the motion, Chris? To substitute? Okay. That works.
I don't care how, Chris Weiner, I don't really care personally at the end of the day which way you go. But I find it very hard that we're spending 2 hours over 200 pounds, and I hope this council will. This council's had a lot of experience with this issue, and I know a lot of people would like to just see this vote and see what happens. But yes, I would rather see it be slippage, because I think that's consistent with the closed areas. I would vote against this personally and go for the first one, but I mean, at the end of the day, operational discard shouldn't be allowed. So the council should decide which one or the other, but I would, just vote on it. Thank you.
Against? Are you against it, Jeff? Okay. Getting late in the day. Your hand's not going up high. My eyes are going down.
And I'll drop the puck for another hour and 10 minutes, so we'll keep going. It's how can we have a fishery where we're allowing operational discards in the purse seine fleet because we don't really care about that, but where you will bring the midwater trawl fleet to its knees, and I think there's some people in this room who would love to see this. It kind of reminds me of the old Jim Bowie TV shows, when the guys get in the way and he throws the knife at the guy's back just before he gets away. That's what this is all about, I think. This is about, maybe not for everybody around the table, and I don't want to impugn any council members' motives, but
You know, if you go to page 25 of the framework Appendix 2, you'll see that operational discards are coded by the observers. The observers are seeing the fish. They're estimating how much fish is being lost between the time that you take the pump off and can clip the bag again. The bag's open, right? As far as the closed areas go, we stay out of there because we don't, a lot of these boats, they don't have rigs. We don't have a rig over top with Gilsons on it and so forth that have the power to be able to pull these things up. That's not how the boats work. We don't even go into the closed areas. The closed areas, now we have a prohibition in all the closed areas, and I really don't know why we have them. Mary Beth told me not to raise this issue, but if you want consistency, I think we should change the groundfish closed area rules because I don't think we're catching very much groundfish outside of haddock, but I had to say it. I think it's a red herring, frankly. So I do. I really do. Now, this fish is, we're recording the fish. The observers have access to it. On our boat, we cannot pull the fish up over the side. We don't have a Gilson. So you take the pump off. Now the bag is open. What's left in there is going to go, it's going to go in the water. And what we do, we have protocols and we've had no problem with our observers. The observer can see what's in the bag before we take the pump off, if we can't pump it all out. And if you go on page 25 of Framework Appendix 2, you'll see the code is such that it's all being recorded in the discard log, which we've agreed and supported in our fishery so that we can continue to operate, so that we can continue to provide the public with information about all the fish that's landed. By statistical area, overall, operational discards represent 0.004% to 1.6% of the fish that's being recorded, or that's either being recorded or everything is being harvested. I'm not really sure what that means. Now, we just changed. We just went from 95% to a 92% closure in this fishery. For many, many, many years, 95%, the 5% between 95 and 100 represents management uncertainty. And if you go back and you look at the last assessment, you'll see the last assessment says discards in this fishery are not a significant biological issue. In other words, they're being counted. Now we close at 92. Now we've got an 8% management uncertainty area. And at the same time, operational discards represent 0.004 to 1.6%. And this, number one, I don't know how you can prohibit something and then allow it in the same motion, too. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. So I'm opposed to the motion. I think this issue is threatening the survivability of the midwater trawl fishery without a biological implication. And I frankly think it's probably arbitrary and capricious to allow one fleet to be able to discard operationally and to try to shut another one down. I think it's outrageous, frankly. And I think that it's just like that knife Jim Bowie throws when the guy's getting out of the room right in the back before we're done. This is the way to get us. I think it's wrong. These fish are being counted. The observers, we work with the observers to make sure that the observers can see what's in that bag. And we stay out of the closed areas because we can't bring the fish on board. It's just operationally impossible. Like Ryan said, these are operational discards. So 0.004 to 1.6% of the fish out of 116,000 metric ton fishery that feeds the lobster traps of New England, which everybody loves the lobster fleet, you know. So I'm opposed to this. I think it's outrageous and appreciate the opportunity to say that. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we should call the question.
Thank you for that. But before we do, are there any other council members that have a burning desire to comment? Mike.
I don't have a burning desire to comment, but what we've heard over and over again is views about how good the observer information is with respect to the operational discards. And heard a lot of things from a lot of people. I personally would value some view being expressed directly from the center, the observer program or something like that as to their feeling about how well operational discards are being estimated, and in particular, not just, you know, whether it's 200 pounds or 250 pounds, because that's sort of irrelevant in the big picture, but are there species in there that, you know, are not represented in this catch that's being sampled on deck, which is the real concern in my mind. Thank you.
You do that in 2 minutes or less, Bill?
I'm going to ask Wendy to step forward, actually.
Wendy Gabriel, Northeast Fisheries Science Center. I'm the Chief of the Fisheries and Ecosystems Monitoring and Analysis Division, which includes the Observer Program. And I would say in terms of the quality, the representativeness of the species in the operational discard component, I don't believe we've compared that explicitly to the catch composition of the landed part. I will say that when you've got an observer visually staring at 100% of the operational discard in the net is probably much more accurate than a subsample of a very high-volume fishery, even though we do work as much as we can to reduce that uncertainty.
Thank you. Vincent, did you have your hand up? Okay. To Matt's point, call a question on the motion to substitute. Those support the motion on the board, please indicate so.
What was it?
Motion to substitute. Okay. Those opposed? Anyone abstaining? And one recusal. So the motion fails 4-14, 1-1. We're back to the main motion. Sorry, Karen. It was 4-10, 1-1. Lori.
Since the motion to substitute was a straight prohibition, should I assume that this motion would then treat operational discards like slippage, or is that still something we're going to address subsequent?
I think that needs to be clarified. Tom?
Yeah, as the original maker of this motion, I continue to think it's pretty clear. Just imagine that the term operational discards was never invented. Right? So you're bringing the catch aboard to be sampled. If not, then we have three classes of exemptions, right? And if not one of those three, it's a slippage event. I mean, so you have a pretty comprehensive, clear approach. So this motion, my intent with this motion originally at the committee and now that it's here is there are no more operational discards. They're prohibited as a practice in the fishery. We're trying to get all the catch on board to be sampled. And so we'll deal with exemptions or any clarifications under our slippage discussion tomorrow. That's my intent.
Tom.
I just have a question for Lori. When they talk, does the language for the closed areas still use the term operational discards? Or is that gone?
No, but the regulations define slippage. And in Amendment 5, we included in our definition of slippage that it does not include operational discards. So the way that the regulations are set up is that, I guess I'd ask the service, but essentially the regulations for the closed area provisions don't refer specifically to operational discards, but they refer to regulations that would apply if they meet the definition of slippage in the regulations. And the definition of slippage does not include operational discards. So it's confusing the way the regulations are written, and I think that if this moves forward, we'll just have to, the regulatory text defining slippage, the definition of slippage, would have to be modified.
Ellen.
I know we're going to discuss this tomorrow, but
If it's about an issue for tomorrow, can we hold that thought?
It's about this.
Okay.
You know, I think that what I have been dealing with is the fact that this may be a safety issue. It wouldn't be a safety issue all the time. So there would be times when it's quite possible to bring the fish, the operational discards on board. So tomorrow I am going to plan to keep the ability to not bring fish on board and have it not be a slippage event if it is a safety issue. So in that, with that in mind, I'm probably going to be voting in favor of this.
Okay, David, you got the last word.
I move to amend to add the language of operational discards and not to be defined as slippage. I'd rather deal with it today than tomorrow.
I'm too brain dead to know whether or not that's too similar to the previous motion substitute to know the difference. But that's a good thing for you, because I'm going to ask for a second. Seeing none, the motion dies for lack of a second. Ellen.
I'm going to make a motion to add to this motion that the council...
Wait till Karen gets back to the main motion there.
That the council support operational discard option B and that the operational discards... No, sorry. That's... Okay. Where's the original one? That the council support operational discards... Discard option B... That's not the full... I'm going with the full motion. The original motion. Okay. Okay. That the council support operational discard option B, operational discards prohibited on midwater trawl vessels in all areas on trips with an observer on board, unless the operational discard, unless bringing the operational discards on board would, I'm trying to think, would affect the safety of the crew. Thank you.
Is there a second to the motion to amend? Terry. All right. Tom.
I really wish, and I'd urge, perhaps we could withdraw this. If we don't have operational discards, but they're prohibited, and we have a safety exemption that we're going to discuss tomorrow, if you need to slip catch for safety, the committee's recommendation already covers that. So I would urge, maybe request, that we just withdraw this, because I do believe that we're covering the safety exemption in the committee's recommendation that we'll be dealing with tomorrow morning.
You all right with that, Ella? Or you want to vote it up or down?
Okay. I'm not happy with withdrawing it, because I think that it's a very important issue, but I will.
My suggestion is that we will come up with a far better end product if you withdraw it, and we have a night to do some wordsmithing in the morning. So we're back to the main motion. Matt.
I'd like to call that question too, sir.
Yeah. Okay. Those support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those opposed?
Six.
And those abstaining? And those are recusing. It was 6-6-1-1. The motion fails for the lack of a majority. 6-6-3-1?
Oh, three abstained, right?
Who else abstained? John?
John, Vincent, and Terry.
Okay. Tom.
Sorry, just trying to get that, understand that vote count. Are we clear on that? Do we need to re-vote?
It's 6-6-3-1.
Failed.
So my suggestion is we adjourn for the evening and start again tomorrow morning at 8:30. Tony.
Terry, I just wanted to see if I could, not to have it be discussed today, but at least bring up, I won't be here tomorrow for the RSA issue, for at least the council to address maybe tomorrow when I'm not here or in the future. Is that possible for 2 minutes?
That'd be fine, Tom.
Of you.